This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for this program. Your number is 877-217-5757. Our email address is talk@talklouisiana.org. And in studio for the first portion of our show today is Bill Bryan, former Deputy Attorney General, lawyer, and also the Executive Director of the Independent Party of Louisiana. And it is the fastest growing party in our state, and it, of course, would be affected dramatically, as would all third party and no party entities in Louisiana, if we went to a closed primary. We've had the open primary in statewide elections since 1975, and there is a move in the legislature to change the way we conduct elections in Louisiana. Again, 877-217-5757. Right now, people might be surprised to know the Democratic Party still has more members than any other party in Louisiana. 1,257,678 is the number for the Democratic Party. And of those, about 750,000 are African American, so which means that the Democratic Party now is an overwhelmingly party that is an overwhelming majority of Democrats are black. And the Republican Party, 1,029,535 Republicans, of which almost a million are white. There are only 22,324 African-American Republicans in the Louisiana population. Elbert Guillory and 22,323 other souls who are black Republicans in Louisiana. But then we get to the other parties, and no party is the most prominent of those who are not affiliated with any of the two major parties. No party, 685,000, and independent, Bill's party, 116,542, and it's not a party that's been around that long. Bill was here along with Pat Bergeron when it was formed. How many years now? Just a couple, right?
2016, December of 2016.
It's been almost 5 years then, so
yes, it
so
has.
It has been a while, but still 116,542. And our friend Mike Wolf, who is often with us, is the godfather of the Libertarian Party. The Libertarians only have 16,152, and when I was talking to Mike last night, he says, look, we have an office, we have a staff, we have conventions. The Independent Party is just kind of this mishmash with no staff, very few office holders, and does not even have a convention. And yet you're the fastest growing party in Louisiana. How are you doing that?
We're doing it by being an anti-party. One of the reasons people are calling us is because they're disturbed and tired of the two-party system. That was the reason I began the party, is because after the 2016 election, a number of people called me and said that they're fed up with the binary choice. I didn't like Hillary, didn't like Trump, I didn't know who to vote for, but that was my only two choices. The state legislature had passed a law in 2014, mm-hmm. which allowed for the formation of an independent party. No one had done anything with it. When I started getting all these phone calls, I decided to take the initiative, but I didn't want to have just another party like the Democrat, Republican, or the Libertarian Party. And actually, we started it as a bottom-up movement instead of a top-down party, where we don't have a chairman that says, here are the candidates you have to vote for, here's our agenda. I began the party, had it started an alliance for the Louisiana independent voters. And I began going around the state and listening to people and finding out what their concerns were, because a lot of people had just checked out of politics because they didn't feel like they had a seat at the table of the other two parties.
Okay. But are people registering for your party thinking they're registering independent, thinking they're registering no party, and by mistake becoming members of your party?
They're registering as independents now because they know that there is an independent party. Previous to 2016, people registered as no party, and they would put independent in there because they didn't want to be part of a party.
Okay.
So the people that are registered like that, we sent them letters and saying, you know, we have an independent party now, And so they can either opt out and become no party, or they can stay in the independent party.
So you do send everyone a letter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. 877-217-5757 is your number. The independent party in Louisiana, 116,542 members. It's a substantial party, and we know in Louisiana we've had elections decided by much fewer than 116,000 votes,
yeah,
including the election for governor last year. And as I look at talk at talklouisiana.org, Steve in University Acres says that the two members, prominent members, you and Mr. Bergeron, were both big anti-Trumpers in the last election. So does the Independent Party oppose Donald Trump?
We don't have a position on candidates. We have supported some candidates in previous elections, but it was a myriad of Democrats and Republicans. The party itself doesn't take a position one way or another.
But individually, it's fair to say you and Bergeron were not on the Trump team.
Correct.
Okay. And did that in any way affect membership one way or the other?
No, actually, I don't think that in and of itself affected membership. I think a lot of the things that Donald Trump did has affected our membership and increase, because we've a majority of the people from whom I've received phone calls are disgruntled Republicans who say that they can't be a part of the Republican Party anymore. They don't want to be a Democrat. And because Louisiana has open primaries, they can join the Independent Party and then still vote for whom they want. They just don't agree with the Republican Party issues anymore.
Now, Donald Trump did win Louisiana by over 399,000 votes. He won by a landslide in Louisiana. He lost by a landslide nationally, but he did win Louisiana quite handsomely. And put it in perspective, John Bell won by 40,000 votes, and Donald Trump wins by 400,000 votes, 10 times the amount. So he is a big player, and it shows that the electorate in Louisiana has swung to the right in statewide elections. And there are those, Bill, who say, look, the reason we have more Democrats than Republicans now is that a lot of these people who have been Democrats their whole life, they have no reason to change because they can vote in any election they want to right now with an open primary. But if it were a closed primary, they would become like John Kennedy and Bill Cassidy, these former Republicans who then would, or former Democrats who would then have to switch over to the Republican Party to vote with the candidates that they prefer most. Is that fair?
True. And that was one of the problems that we had in 2006 and 2008 when we did have that closed party primary. Because people had voted for so long, they had registered as a Democrat back in the 50s when they didn't have a Republican Party. And they continued to vote Republican because we had an open primary and you can vote for whomever you wanted. When we had the closed party primaries, people came to vote. They had been voting Republican. They assumed that they were Republican, and they didn't realize that they hadn't changed. So it had caused a problem. But now that there's going to be this initiative to have closed party primaries, it would encourage people to change.
Now, there are some members, maybe more than a few, of the Black Caucus at the legislature who are in favor of going to a closed primary. Because if that were to happen, most likely in most races, there would be Black Democrats who would be nominated and would win the party primary if we went to a closed primary. And when we look at the voter registration, they're now among Democrats, Bill, and they're what, almost a million Black, I take that back, 750,000 right, African Americans, and about 450,000 whites, so a 300,000 vote margin. But are we ready as a state to elect Black people to statewide office? We've never done it.
We have not. I know that the sentiment seems to be changing, and like I said, I've been getting phone calls from disgruntled Republicans. So I think that there are younger voters who are more receptive to that. I think a lot of the older voters are obviously against that. But I think that there is a time soon when we will have a statewide African-American.
And this configuration of voters comes into play when we redistrict, as we will soon, because lawmakers have access to this information, and they see which precincts are heavily Democratic, which are heavily Republican. And if you're a Republican, as most of the legislature is, you want as few Democrats. It doesn't matter whether they're white or black. Right. You want as few Democrats in your district as you can find.
So, true.
So is that fair based on what we're seeing with these weird, weird configurations, including the contours of the 2nd District, which has North Baton Rouge and the great city of New Orleans in the same district?
Well, and I think that goes back to what you were saying earlier. I think you have a lot of registered Democrats who vote Republican. So I think if you just go by registration, it's sort of disingenuous. And one of the things that the independent party is working on is asking for an independent redistricting commission so that we can take some of the legislature out.
And a listener correctly notes that more often than not, they're looking more at race than they are at party.
Correct.
Because we know that African Americans vote in Louisiana and most of the country more than 90% Democratic. 877-217-5757, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Another segment with Bill Bryan, the executive director of the Independent Party of Louisiana. And there is a bill in the legislature filed by Senator Sharon Hewitt that would move Louisiana to a closed primary. I think Bill has it in front of him. What are the major points in the bill, Bill?
Well, one of the larger points is that a recognized political party would have to have a membership consisting of no less than 5% of the registered voters in the state at least 60 days prior to qualifying to hold a party primary for congressional elections. And that's all Sharon's bill is right now, is for congressional primaries.
It would not involve other races.
Not right now.
But we did this in 2008 and then went right back. But it enabled Bill Cassidy to win a congressional seat because he didn't get a majority. But in the way the law was at that time, a plurality won.
Correct.
And he got Mike Jackson in the race, and it was Cassidy 48, Cashew 40, and Jackson 12.
Right.
And so is there any move to switch to open primary for everything in the legislature at this point?
Switch to open? You mean close?
No, switch. Excuse me. From open primary to close primary.
I'm sure there are a lot of initiatives being considered. I know that there's some conversation about maybe having close party primary for governor, and probably for the statewide elections, because it gives opportunity, like you said earlier, for the more extreme candidate in that party to get elected, which is what a lot of the membership in those particular parties would want. And so that would confine it would prevent some moderate people from getting elected. So
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, Mr. Bryan, is there a concern that if Louisiana returns to party primaries, there may be extremist QAnon believers that actually get elected to office?
Well, we had that in Georgia.
Yeah, it's quite possible. I mean, that's probably the primary concern of having the closed party primaries, is so that the party can get their most extreme candidate as their representative in that particular election. So certainly there's a concern.
You're saying more extreme candidates would be elected in a closed primary system?
Within the party. The party would be able to dictate who they're.
But in an open primary, as you know, we ended up with Duke and Edwards in 91, and we would not have had that most likely. Almost certainly we would not have had it in a closed primary system. We would have probably had Edwards and Romer, and Romer would have been the governor. Because Romer could have beaten either one of them head up pretty handily, but he got squeezed in an open primary.
Well, and that's generally what has happened, is that 20% on each end gets the nomination because the 60 in the middle gets divided up into a plethora of candidates. And so that's why you have those two extremes.
But I'm not sure how it would work, for example, if in 2023, 2 years away from now, in the governor's election and the Republican primary, if we had Jeff Landry and Billy Nungesser and Mike Johnson and Garrett Graves and Clay Higgins, who's also looking at it, based on what
Sharon Hewitt.
And Sharon Hewitt. But based on what you're saying, obviously the most conservative, most right wing is Higgins. And by the way, I'm told that there are people who are saying that he could be a dangerous candidate if he ran for governor. And dangerous, and that he might win. Some people would obviously like it, and they would be going hurrah. But if he got in a runoff with a Democrat, he would certainly have a fighting chance.
He would have an extremely
good chance, not just a fighting chance. Yeah, he would be the favorite.
Exactly. In Louisiana, because 8 out of 10 white Louisianians voted for for Donald Trump. So,
and 6 out of 10 voted for David Duke.
Right.
And Clay Higgins, for all of his supposed flaws, he's no David Duke.
Exactly.
So, yeah, Clay Higgins could be the next governor of Louisiana.
He could.
877-217-5757. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. Hello?
Yeah. Phil, you're on the air. Okay.
Yeah, hi. Yes, sir. I have the question. Are you going to be selling your membership roll, I mean your voter's roll, to people, your voter's list? I mean, isn't this basically made up of Republicans who are ashamed to call themselves Republicans?
All right.
No and no. I have no intention on
actually
selling.
It's public record, Phil. He wouldn't. Anybody who bought it wouldn't be a very good business person, because all you got to do is look it up.
Right.
Now, it's different for people who contribute to a campaign, but even now, that's pretty much public record as well, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah.
It's all on the internet between Secretary of State's office and Ethics Administration. Pretty much everything's on the internet.
But back in the day, we do remember when David Ernest Duke sold his contributors to Mike Foster, and Mike Foster never used it, but suddenly, David Duke got out of that governor's race in 1995. I wonder what got him out, Bill. Got him out?
I think,
was he bribed?
Well,
was he bribed?
Bribed is a criminal accusation.
Well,
but
there
I think
was an
he
investigation.
Was
Mr. Duke went to prison for it, but Mike Foster was never indicted. I wonder why. I wonder why. But he definitely paid David Duke money for a voting list he never used, and Duke just suddenly got out of the governor's election.
Well,
interesting.
Politics strange bedfellows.
877-217-5757 is your number, and it's Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning. Good morning. To your guests, too, good morning.
Good morning.
Always good to have some new blood in the system. We all concentrate on, the governor's race and the presidential, but representatives, state senators, is anybody thinking about running under representing new parties, or even looking at, being fielded that are possible?
All right. Well, that's a good question. Are you going to have a slate of candidates? Because the Libertarian Party does.
We are working toward that. Actually, what we're doing is, I mentioned earlier, I'm working from bottom up, and I'm actually working on getting candidates interested in running for school board, constables for smaller elections, building a bench so that we can get into the legislature and statewide elections.
All right. Sam on government says Bergeron would be a good nominee for governor of the Independent Party. What do you think?
Well,
he used to work for Susie Terrell as like the number two person in the old Commissioner of Elections Office.
Well,
right?
Pat has a very storied political past. He was very heavily involved in the Democratic Party for a number of years. And then he went to the Republican Party, and now he's in the Independent Party.
And so he switched from Republican to Independent, and you switched from Democrat.
Correct.
To Independent. Now, Bill, you've been on this show. I think it's apparent that you lean more in favor of the Democratic philosophy. You just couldn't stomach the candidates? What was it that got you out?
Well, as the gentleman just mentioned, I think it's time that we have some new blood. I think that sometimes when you look at both of the political parties, they almost seem like they're the same. They have a lot of corporate investment. There's really not a whole lot that distinguishes the two. And so, as I said earlier, in 2016, I got a lot of phone calls from people interested in becoming independent and seeing if they could have something other than a binary choice.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens with the legislature. And the governor of Louisiana, I don't think, is a fan of the closed primary. But even if he were to veto a bill, it could be overridden.
Well, I mean, it could be overridden, but I think that he has a lot of political capital now, and I think that it's not. I think it's something that he should override. I don't think that we need to disenfranchise.
Should veto, you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, veto, yeah. Whether it gets overridden or not. I mean, because you're talking about disenfranchising 825,000 voters if you have a closed party primary.
When you say disenfranchising, they could still vote in the general election.
In the general, but not in the primary.
Unless one of the parties said, and the Democrats did, remember, in 2008, correct. They allowed independents to vote in their primary. But if there were a Republican governor, this would probably be on its way to the finish line.
Slam dunk.
And in a couple of years, 3 years, there probably will be a Republican governor. Probably. Probably. Might be an independent governor.
Right.
Might be Pat Bergeron. Bill Bryan, thank you for joining us today, and we'll follow this with you. Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau editor of The Advocate, is with us next, and much to catch up with him about. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Back after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, and is our Thursday tradition. We are joined by Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate. Your number again is 877-217-5757. Governor Edwards opened the legislative session this week at Southern University, Mumford Stadium, had on a nice blue coat with a blue and gold tie, and he's trying to make the case that Louisiana is going to have a good year despite the COVID implications, and one of the major reasons, perhaps the major reason, is the fact that we're getting lots of federal money. But Mark Ballard, because of that, there isn't a stomach to pass like road taxes and things that some would believe are long overdue. What can happen in this environment?
Well, that's a good question. Yesterday, there was an effort to try to kind of roll back some of those tax exemptions that we give out to special interests. And there was a massive counteraction to that, to the point where the Republican from Lafayette, who Stuart Bishop, who was trying to run this through his committee, was like, you know, I'm going to remember you guys, but I mean, it was just a massive outpouring of don't cut my exemption.
Don't cut my exemption. And when we have money, we've seen this before, we act like it's going to go on forevermore. That resulted in the discontinuation of the Stelly plan, which could have saved Louisiana from cuts to higher ed in particular. But at the time, we had lots of federal money coming in from Hurricane Katrina, and we acted as though it was going to last from now until the end of time. It turned out otherwise. So is there a danger of doing it all over?
Well, one thing that's protecting us this time around is that the money that is coming in for the stimulus from the economic impact on the pandemic is not allowed to be used to offset cutting taxes. And that's was a concern that they had. And, I mean, you could get a significant penalty for, you know, getting, I don't know, $100 million and then cutting taxes $100 million and backfilling. So that was... Mm-hmm. That was what happened back during the Stelly time, and so we have a guard against that. But again, yeah, I mean, when we have lots of money, the first thing we think about is putting it in our pockets. So,
well, there are some bills pertaining to things other than money, and those often generate interest. And the Louisiana legislature has a penchant for diving into these kinds of things, and prostitution is one of them. That would seem to be highly, highly unlikely. But Mandy Landry of New Orleans, by the way, a graduate of Notre Dame and Georgetown, is sponsoring a bill. But the marijuana one is a little different because, according to a poll, 2/3 of the people in our state are in favor of legalization of recreational marijuana. Is that enough to sway the Louisiana legislature, Mark?
Well, the legislature, not just this one, but all prior ones, have shown that they are inured to any public polls what the public actually wants and how that would translate into legislation. I personally don't think that recreational use of marijuana, the like New York, Massachusetts, and a number of other states have passed, is going to pass in Louisiana.
And
we may see an expansion with medical marijuana usage, but not recreational usage.
It would probably mean we're among the last to go this route. And then there is this review of the vaccine for COVID-19 and the states that are most likely to have citizens not wanting to get a vaccine or declining to do so are largely red states. And there we are right there with Mississippi and Alabama. I've gotten my two shots now, Mark. I suspect you have too, but
I have too, and happily so.
Yeah, I feel like a new man, but and there were no real problems. But there are others who believe that this is more dangerous than trying to avoid getting COVID without a vaccine, and they obviously are in more number per capita in our state than in others. Is this a huge problem?
Well, it's a big problem, I would have to say. I mean, that there is a reluctance to do it. If, remember that we went for an entire year with a substantial portion of the population thinking it was all made up as a way to elect Joe Biden. And then, you know, we went through throughout all of last year, a substantial number of people wanted to overrule the governor and reopen immediately, you know, during some of the spikes in infections. So, you know, I see that this is just the next step. We're going to have, if you allow me a plug, but we're going to have a story in the Sunday paper that's going to show how many of the legislators themselves have been vaccinated. And what we found was that among the more conservative ones, they said, you know, they had not, or they wouldn't answer the question, or they got angry about being asked the question, you know, so that kind of shows that that there is a substantial number of people out in Louisiana that don't want to be vaccinated.
We had the treasurer, John Schroeder, on the show a few weeks ago, and he said he would not be vaccinated. Now, he has had it, so he may have antibodies, but it is something that's being recommended, Mark, for even those who have had COVID-19. And who knows, we may have to do this every year now. It may be like a flu shot. So this is not just going away. There will be people dying, unfortunately, of COVID-19, most likely in the years to come. But it would seem, based on what we know, that the vaccine is the best shot. Pardon the pun.
It is. I mean, even with the problem, the little pause that they've given for Johnson & Johnson, and that's basically to find out, you know, to double check how a very rare condition that comes from it, and they're double checking it, being super careful about it. But and we'll know in 10 days whether they're going to continue with the Johnson & Johnson. I mean, and the reports that we're getting from Europe that are having troubles with some of their vaccines. I mean, this is the way to get away with. You need to get vaccinated. That's it.
And some companies are laminating it free of charge, and people are showcasing their freshly laminated vaccine card. Those who have been vaccinated, like you and me, we tend to be kind of proud of it, and maybe
right.
For good reason. Maybe I do feel like you know, I somehow, some way, beat the odds because I'm out and about, and I would think I've been exposed, but I didn't get it, and now I feel like I won't get it. So I'm feeling really good.
Yeah. I'm the target. You know, I have. If you looked at all of the things that we get you, you know, get you sent to the hospital for COVID, and I mean, my bingo card was filled out, so I mean, I'm very happy about getting the vaccination and perfectly willing to wear my mask until they say it's safe not to.
Patrick in Ennis-Wald Estates. Patrick, you were on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Hey. Hey, I consider myself a liberal conservative. I believe in liberty, and I believe to do that, you conserve the Constitution. And so I do support prostitution if it's between consenting adults of right mind. You know, I do not think the government belongs in an adult relationship. And likewise, I support going ahead and legalizing marijuana as long as it's not done around children, because I think they're minors and they can't make that decision. And there's a better way to enforce that through, you know, workplaces can still do drug tests and stuff like that. I've never done it. I don't care for it. I wouldn't want it being done in public. But is there any Republicans or conservatives that are supporting this and not just Democrats?
Supporting what?
Supporting I think there's a Democrat in Congress that's trying to push the prostitution. Is there any Republicans on board with her?
In the state legislature.
In the state, yes, sir.
Yeah, and Mandy Landry is her name, and she's a represents a kind of mid-city New Orleans, and she's pushing it primarily because the penalties between the purchaser and then the prostitute are not the same. It's the women that end up the prostitutes that end up getting really slammed by the court system, and they let the Johns go away, and that's mostly what she's aiming for, is you know, to decriminalize it so that the women don't end up having to go, you know, spend time in jail and have their records and have a criminal record, whereas the guys that are purchasing the sex are, you know, not even their names are not listed. So that's what she's aiming for in that, and I think that's the big. There's not been a whole lot of support rallying around that particular argument. And as far as the recreational use of marijuana, what we've found is that it's being pushed by younger Republicans who are more of a libertarian bent, but there's not a whole lot of, and this is bipartisan, there's not a whole lot of support among the older legislators.
And one person we know who patronized prostitutes was a former U.S. Senator, former lawmaker David Bruce Vitter, who ran second to John Bel Edwards in the year of 2019 for governor. What a fascinating scenario it would be if a prostitution bill had gotten to Governor Vitter's desk, but we will probably never know that unless he runs again. And of course, in Louisiana, there are second acts, and who knows, David Bruce Vitter might be on the ballot for governor in 2023. And if it were to happen, Mark, he would probably end up being a formidable candidate. So I don't know that we should count out the former U.S. Senator from Jefferson Parish. We'll talk more with Mark Ballard after this quick timeout. This is Jim Inkster. We're glad you're listening to Talk Louisiana. And if you're so inclined, we have another quarter hour with Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate. Most Thursdays he joins us. And he is a prolific writer in addition to being an editor. And we're glad he takes time from his busy schedule to talk with us. Yesterday, he had the front page story above the fold in The Advocate, Chancellor of LSU's Shreveport Medical School suspended. This is another wrinkle in the continuing saga at LSU on all campuses involving complaints and revelations of sexual harassment and misconduct. What's happening in Shreveport?
Well, the first thing that you bring out is that this is the first LSU executive who has a current employee, I guess, who has been suspended because of his reactions in the Title IX investigations that have been going on. It had only been out of the athletic department up until this point, you know, with kind of comments about the rest of the rest of the system. And well, this is a medical school in Shreveport, and Dr. Ghali is now on suspension, and his contract expires in December. In the meantime, what was interesting about this is that apparently there had been sexual harassment complaints, which he dealt with, and then and apparently dealt with properly, or at least the Title IX office, as it used to be in Baton Rouge, said they were okay. But But then he started retaliating, allegedly, against top faculty members of the medical school who had been helping the girls who had made these, the women students who had been making these claims, and started retaliating against them for pushing these claims. And that also is not supposed to happen under federal law if it was accurate.
Well, today in The Advocate, the former state lawmaker, former labor secretary, Gary Forster, he writes, Governor Edwards should haul interim LSU president Tom Galligan in his office demanding actions be taken and that he be briefed frequently about developments and anticipated actions. He should have athletic director Scott Woodward and coach Ed Orgeron in his office pressing them for every bit of information they have on this morass of misogyny and malfeasance. So Gary Forster is a Republican, probably no fan of Governor Edwards, but as we have talked, Governor Edwards has a different management style than Governor Vitter would have, and he is, I'm sure he's involved, Mark, but he's not making headlines about his involvement.
No, he's been, I mean, we're hearing about him phone calling, you know, members of the board, members of the top administrators at the LSU system. And so, I mean, I know that he's kind of touching base, but he has basically said that it's, you know, that he wants them to react and wants them to do it. He's told the administrators and the board that he wanted that Hush Blackwell report made public, and he wanted them to, you know, embrace the recommendations that that the Hush Blackwell had recommended, and they've done that. You know, and are working on it now. But there are a lot of issues that are in and around all of this, that have not been addressed.
A lot of questions remain to be answered, no doubt. Now, the state Senate, and we've got a few people holding on, so if you'll stay with us, I want one more response from Mark, and then we'll go to our callers have been waiting very patiently, but the state Senate, 27 Republicans, 12 Democrats, and the Senate in Louisiana has confirmation authority over the LSU board, and it's something that's done backward in our state, but there are some board members who have been voting, and some for more than a year without ever being confirmed, and one of those is Collis Temple, and he, of course, made headlines with his criticism of the owner of Rouse's, and there are rumors that, the math would seem to indicate it, that Collis Temple may not be confirmed as an LSU board member. Wouldn't that be something, Mark?
Well, that would be something, because that is a board that has very few African Americans on it.
And Governor Edwards may not be able to help.
There is a lot of anger. There is a lot of anger against the board members in the legislature, or among some legislators right now.
Well, Collis is one of those who wasn't there when all this stuff was happening, but he did speak out on something that is politically explosive, as we know. And most members of the Louisiana State Senate probably still believe that Donald Trump won the election.
That may be true, but the thing is that Tom Galligan wasn't there when this was happening, and neither was Scott Woodward. But right now, the legislature, the Senate, or some members of the Senate anyway—I can't say that sweepingly—they're looking for somebody to pay for it, and it may end up being those people who were not there and kind of got caught in the middle of the crossfire of what happened before they came, who will end up having to pay the price on this.
All right. We lost a couple of you. I'm sorry you weren't patient enough to hang on, but I'm told Matt Doyle says Henry has waited patiently. Henry at the Country Club, you're on with Mark for your comments, Mr. Henry. Good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Mr. Jim, and good morning, Mr. Mark. Yeah, old Henry's got a little bit of patience here every now and then. Speaking of prostitution, I was wondering if either one of y'all are familiar with Attorney General Landry and what he's doing about this whistleblower that he's targeting in his office, if he's decided to back off and let the chips fall where they may, or if he's trying to still trying to cover things up.
All right. I don't know that he was trying to cover it up, but Andrea Gallo wrote a very good story on this, stating that Jeff Landry is considering action against the whistleblower. Now, Jeff Landry's gone off script. He sued Andrea Gallo, as we know, and lost. What about this, Mark?
Well, I'm unsure if he's done anything more than talk about it. So yeah. He may have, but it hasn't come to my attention yet.
Well, and Jeff Landry is, and when I mentioned, and it was a listener who prodded me, but David Vitter will probably not run for governor in 2023, and one of the reasons is that he has his candidate. It's Jeff Landry, who Vitter, even though he lost the election, a lot of his acolytes are in office. Garrett Graves, who worked for him, John Kennedy, Jeff Landry, all of those people are proteges of the former senator from Louisiana.
Yeah, well, this is true. And whether he runs or not, I don't know. I kind of think that he won't. But as you point out, that he has a number of folks who are his acolytes, who he mentored, and they're in office now, and more than what we just named, and they're looking for higher office as well.
And if it had not been for that scandal, I don't think there's much doubt that David Vitter would have been governor of Louisiana and probably would have run for president of the United States. He was a man of great ambition.
Well, he certainly was looking far further than the governor's mansion here.
I did see that Gary Forster in his column, and as mentioned, he is a Republican. He is... doubting whether Governor Jindal really didn't know about the Les Miles situation. He says that it's probably not credible to believe that, considering three board members who were associates of Governor Jindal and appointees, they knew about it. I would suspect Governor Jindal knew about it.
Yeah, I think I lost in the backup. I would suspect that Governor Jindal knew about it. There was very little that went on that did not get to the his upper levels. And if it got up on the fourth floor to some of his close assistants, it got to him.
Now, Mark, Jason in Jones Creek says we should be posting on social media the fact that we got shots. Which vaccine did you get?
Moderna.
Moderna.
You know, I can't tell you the truth, Jim. It didn't really matter. When I arrived at Walgreens to do it, you know, it was like, you know, here's my arm, put it in. I didn't learn about which one it was until afterwards, and I had to ask, you know. So,
all right. As we round the corner and head for home, listener Allie in Lafayette, and I found the story from Sam Carlin. It's been a few days, April 2nd. Dark money group formed by Louisiana legislative leaders. The story reads, a conservative activist is asking the Louisiana Board of Ethics to investigate whether House Speaker Clay Schexnider and Senate President Paige Cortez are evading disclosure requirements by using a nonprofit group to engage in political activity. Michael Lunsford, who runs the Lafayette-based Citizens for New Louisiana, sent the complaint to the Federal Election Commission. What's going on here, Mark?
Well, they set up a super PAC, basically, to kind of support what the Republicans in the legislature were doing. And so questions have been raised about, you know, is that proper and, you know, does it go against ethics rulings? And that is something that the Ethics Board is taking a look at. And, you know, but that is the issue, is that they are using these super PAC, in which you don't have to explain who gives you money, to kind of support the stuff that they're doing in the legislature.
Well, it's... another way to raise money, and why would people not want these things to be made public? That's a question that I'm sure we're not going to be able to answer in 15 seconds. But, Mark, thanks, and we'll be calling on you again next Thursday. Appreciate you.
No steps.
First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for Talk Louisiana. For Matt Doyle, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening. Back tomorrow. Stay safe and stay tuned.